You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Elizabeth Stitt. Elizabeth shares with us a story, a personal story from her life about a time when she consciously and intentionally chose not to turn to bitterness in her life, not to let that take root, but instead to turn towards joy and possibilities. Now, if this sounds to you like toxic positivity and rainbows and unicorns, I get it. This is a story about marriage, infidelity, and divorce. I know. Yes, I said what I said. We also talk about walks on the beach and Muppets. So if you're ready, me too. Let's do it. Elizabeth Stitt, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you for having me.
I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
Woohoo! So ready.
Let's do it. All right. So I begin most of my interviews by asking my guests where they are located. What part of the blue marble do you call home these days?
I am very happily in Monterey, California. We moved down during COVID and I still feel so darn lucky to live this close to the ocean.
That is spectacular. And I too like to live close to the ocean. I think that everybody, well, not everybody loves the ocean, but I went through a phase in my life where I was like, I know that we didn't used to know that if you went to the shore, you would be at the shore. But now we do know. So everybody should just go. But maybe that's just me. All right. I love to learn about my guests, a little bit about their personality before we dive into the topic of the day. So this is a general question. It's like wide open, but tell us a little bit about you, as little or as much as you want. Doesn't have to be about your job. Doesn't have to be about your family. Could be the name of your pets, a hobby you have, just a little something about you to get to know you about.
Sure. I always say that if I'm not singing out loud, I am singing in my head. So there is always a song going on. It's very often a musical. And musicals mostly from like the 50s, 60s, and 70s, because those were the musicals that were being played when I was little in my house. I speak German.
Okay.
And I went to a German language camp in Minnesota as a camper. We called them villagers. As a villager for 2 summers, and then I was on staff for 6 summers. And part of learning German was learning a lot of German songs. So I could probably sing 2 hours of German folk songs without interruption. That's a bit unusual.
That is. You have the perfect answer for that random question that is like, tell us something that no one would expect for you. I could sing 2 hours of German folk songs. What a great answer to an icebreaker question. That's so fabulous.
Yeah.
That is really good. Do you get a lot of practice with the German on a daily basis, or is it something that it doesn't?
No. Again, I find I use German when I'm frustrated.
Okay.
You know, if I'm mumbling out loud to myself, if I'm swearing, it's likely to be in German.
Yeah, I get it. If you play cards, this is an old fashioned sort of test, but if you play like Scrabble or cards where you have to count the score, do you count it in German?
No,
Okay.
I can't count in my head.
Okay.
So I have to have paper in front of me.
I used to, when I did study abroad and I had an international group of friends and we would play hearts on the train, and it was hilarious because everybody would count up their score in their own languages. We were all studying the same language, yeah. But whatever their native language is, that's frequently what they would count, which so you had to learn how to focus on just what you were doing, not listen to other things people were saying. All right, but we're off topic a little bit, which is fun. The topic of the day that you proposed was choosing not to be bitter and how that turned into joy and possibility. Does that sound like a fun thing to talk about?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. It does. I love the idea of joy and possibility. Okay. So I don't have a ton of information about the story. You're going to walk me through it and we're going to see where it goes. Let's talk about what was going on in your life when you were making this choice to not be bitter. What is the backstory of when this choice came up?
The backstory is that My husband came to me the New Year's Day of my daughter was 2 and a half and said he was unhappy
Okay.
and that he wanted to go see a therapist. So we went and saw the therapist. That's January 1st. He told me we got had an appointment that week. And it didn't take very long to figure out that he had, in fact, had an affair. And the good news on the affair was that it had been pretty short-lived. And ironically, another piece of good news was that the woman with whom he had the affair was super clear that she didn't want to have an affair. She wanted, like, you're either in or you're out. So you need to go work things out with your wife. Like, you either need to go be together with your wife or leave her, and then we'll see where we are.
Okay.
And I'm actually very grateful for that because I think that given my husband's personality, he probably would have had an affair. And it would have continued, or it wouldn't have continued, and it would have been this source of unseen tension and weirdness. And so I am grateful that, relatively speaking, things moved pretty quickly.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big event in your life, but I gotta say, one of the things that is surprising from that story, and I'm just over here in wonder that you remember it, that you were able to make an appointment with a therapist within a week, which I feel like is very rapid turnaround in modern times for therapists. So that's good, especially at the beginning of the year, because the beginning of the year is January is called Divorce Month. I don't know if you had that little random piece of trivia, but many people make it through the holidays and then they're like, all right, Happy New Year and goodbye.
Well, the
So.
reason we were able to get a therapy appointment was because the woman's name is Natasha, and she later married him, and
Okay.
she's my daughter's stepmother. So Natasha, being very clear, was very directive about, Matthew, you need to go see a therapist.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'm not going to just have an affair with you. We're either doing this or we're not doing this, but you need to be really clear about it and you need some support doing it. So he had already seen a therapist. The therapist had already helped, had coached him to sort of sit down with me and to say, hey,
Oh.
I'm not a happy and I would like to see a therapist with you and we need to make some changes.
So he already had the ball rolling, and
He
that's
already had the
one of the
ball
things
rolling.
that, oh my goodness.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. So that's the backstory of how this choice came up, choosing not to be bitter.
Well, I didn't
When
choose not to be bitter at that point. I mean, at
I
that
was gonna
point,
say,
I
what
was
was
in the
he?
middle of having the rug pulled out from under my life.
Yes.
But
So let's
by,
back up a little bit, though. Let's talk. I'm going
yeah.
to bring you through that and let you talk, because I wondered, because I would have been nominating you for many awards if you had immediately gone to this joyous state. But how long were you guys married before this happened?
We were married at 26. Our daughter was born at 30, and this was 32 going on 33. So
So, 7 years.
27 years, yeah.
7 years. How did you meet your husband? Backing up even further.
We sat next to each other in ninth grade English.
Really? Oh, so you had known each other for a very long time before you became. So this is actually a very long relationship, 7 years of marriage. All right. And so this you gave us the next piece of this, which this did end up breaking up your relationship. You guys decided to no longer be married. Infidelity is the top reason people get divorced. I don't know if you knew
I
that.
did
So,
not know that.
yeah, infidelity is number one. And then money is number two. Those probably flip-flop a little bit. And also, I don't know how reliable this research is. Like, I don't know who does it or, but those two are pretty much on the top. The third one is really entertaining. The third one is sometimes on the list is snoring, which I think is really
That
It's
is
really
very
fascinating.
funny.
So that is it. So, but right when you when this is going on, you're sitting in the counselor's office, maybe not in the first meeting, but first session, but a couple of whenever how long it is happening, and it becomes apparent that he had been there was infidelity in this relationship. What would you say were your top emotions initially when you were going through this, having the rug pulled out from under you?
It's not even an emotion. It was just the sensation. I couldn't eat. I could not eat without feeling like I needed to throw up.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And
So,
I couldn't sit still. I began running. I had never been a runner, and I began running. And I had to run, and running was the only thing I could do to like calm me down enough to allow me to function.
that is really interesting. So, a lot of like trapped energy.
Yeah, I never thought of it that
Maybe,
way.
like the I need to keep moving. That is really interesting. Okay, so how long does the process go on? How quickly does it become that you guys are not going to stay together? How long are you in the process of meeting with the therapist, aware of the infidelity and trying to work through it? Because in the movies, this is a very fast process, but life is not often like the movies.
This was a pretty fast process because by the 18th of March, I moved out.
Okay.
And the reason I moved out was because we were due to go to a group of families, we're going to a beach house. And, he initially made some excuse about work, and so I was going to be taking my daughter down to the beach house. And maybe it was understood that, it was going to be a little bit awkward because here we are in the middle of this awkward place in our relationship. We're going to go hang out with a lot of happy couples. But somehow I forget how, but it became apparent that, like, no, you aren't. This is not about work. This is about you're going to be spending time with Natasha. And so it was just like, this doesn't work, basically.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we are at a place where this doesn't work. My pretending that you're working while you're sleeping with somebody else while I'm going and hanging out with our friends, that doesn't work.
No, oh my gosh, the way you said that just does not sound like any, but I think that, I think a lot of that happens. There's so many times, not just with relationships, but there's so many times in our life where we put the mask on. This is stuff, I've got all this stuff happening in my life, but I've got to go show up in this persona of who I am and just be. Maybe we show up to work, we're having stuff embroiled in our home, we show up and we're professional at work, or your kids are all sick and everything's chaos at your home, but you go to the PTA meeting and you pretend like it's not chaotic. Yeah, all of those things, those times where we dress up and show up in the way that we want people to see us, but you drew the line and said, I can't do it here, I can't do it here. So you moved out.
Moved out, and that he would have moved out, but I strategically, I mean, I had a 2.5 year old basically, and she had spent many, many more hours with me than with her father. And so I knew that I could go and create a new space, and that her connection with me and the routines that we had would help her feel comfortable in that new space. But that she didn't have enough of those connections with her dad, and that having the physical space would help be her connection, that she would still have her room and her crib and her dog. And so I moved out.
You moved out. When did you begin to, how long was it before you began to see that there was a choice in how you chose to feel about this?
He said, he said, so that was March. That was mid-March. And by beginning of May, very beginning of May, he called one night. Happened to be the night before I had a job interview. Thank you, Matthew. He called to say, you know what, this, I don't want a separation. I want a divorce. And so he had filed divorce.
Okay.
And, you know, and that was a clear moment, because that was a moment of, well, for one, I had been in limbo. I had been living in this apartment, but what was going to come next? And so, you know, when you're living like that and you're thinking and you're separated, there's a little bit of, well, I don't know what to plan next. I don't know to plan summer vacation. I don't know to plan, because you don't know if you're going to be together. You don't know if you're not going to be together. So in some ways, it was really clear, okay, if this is divorce, then I'm living here and I have to start to live.
Yes. So let's review a little bit because now I have more of the timeline. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You guys go into therapy, it went or counseling, and in that you discover that there's infidelity in the relationship. And first, you feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath you. You are running as a way to deal with, an overwhelming sense of emotions. A couple months go by, you move out, but at this point, you're not sure that it's a permanent separation. Would you say that there was still, in your mind at that point, there was still a potential for reconciliation?
Think so.
Yeah,
It's been
look,
a long time
been a long
now.
time, but you think that
This
probably.
was 1999.
So it's been a long time, but and the reason I think that that might have been there is that when you described that he called and said, I don't just want a separation, I want a divorce, I filed for divorce, that felt like finality, and you could move on. So that shifts you from indecision and a sense of paralysis, and you can't move forward, and you decide you've got to keep living. Did you know that you were feeling sensations of bitterness and anger? Like, would you have been able to describe it at that time?
I was certainly angry.
Okay.
I know that I was angry. And to the extent that I felt bitter, I had been teaching middle school from the beginning of my career, mostly. And so I had lots of opportunities to observe children of divorce. And I knew that the difference between kids whose parents were getting along, were amicable, who were talking to their kids about things, and where there was bitterness in the divorce was night and day in terms of the effect on the kids.
Yeah.
So, and also, I don't know about you, but the only examples that I had of divorce from growing up, because this was the model when we were young, was, you know, mom's got custody of the kids, dad's got Wednesday night dinner and every other weekend.
Yeah.
And I had multiple examples of dads going off remarrying and having good lives, being happy, right?
Yeah.
Like getting to have new chapters, getting to right wrongs because they had a second chance to get it right. And I saw in my friends the effect of bitter moms on their children.
Really, just sort of being crushed by the pressure of single parenthood and life without the support of the family. Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
and children not feeling free to go and have their own romantic adventures and romantic lives, because it would be being disloyal to their mother in some way.
That loyalty bond can be sneaky. That's sneaky. That's what they call that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had one friend in college who she actually her parents divorced in college, and as part of my adolescent development class, I wrote a paper on the effects of divorce on girls around decision makings about future relationships.
Oh, interesting.
I know, just by because I had this roommate who had been dealing with this, that was the topic that I came up with for the paper. But because of the paper, I had actually given it some thought, and then as I met students and saw students in the way, I was comparing them to the research that I had done.
That is really, really, I think there's a lot in there, right? I think you were very self-aware. I think you were very analytical about the situation that you found yourself in, which is a compliment, right? To not, it's an overwhelming emotional situation. There's not a lot of absolutes in marriage or divorce, but divorce is an overwhelming situation like many other complex things. And so to be able to separate yourself and have that analytical look, I think is fairly unusual. But that's a guess. That's just my opinion. And it puts you in a spot to be intentional about how you want to show up, which I think is a really big deal. And the way, like, I was in my life as an adult, I haven't always been able to do that. But I tell people sometimes with regard to my experience as a step parent, I will refer to it as the decision I was making that I didn't know I had, which I will say I had a choice to either be a person who showed up and added conflict to whatever, there could be none and I could be the source, or I could had more when there was a little, or to do my very, very best to be a person who brought stability and structure to the lives of this family and these kids. And I didn't realize that was the choice that was in front of me for a very, very long time. But when I look back, I'm like, oh, that is what I was choosing, like in all of those situations. Not always perfectly. I'm not representing myself as a perfect person. But that's sort of what I was like, you know, when I think it's unusual in a good way that you were able to say, I have a choice here how I show up, like how I show up. So when we talk about it was quick, 6 months or so before you say, listen, if I'm going to live, I'm going to choose how I'm going to live my life, and I don't want to be angry and bitter. Yeah. And so then give me an example in the moment, because so if he announces that you guys are going to get a divorce, it takes a little while to actually do that paperwork and make it happen. Give me an example of what it actually meant in the moment there to not be bitter in those early days.
I don't think in the early days that I was clear in my mind about not being bitter. It was more of how am I showing up for my daughter? And knowing that kids are super great absorbers of energy, very poor interpreters, right? So if they're getting a lot of stress and negative energy from you, then they are going to internalize it as something to do with themselves. And three, and she was
She was
really old.
very young.
She was very young and she was a late talker. So she was really hadn't been verbal that long. And so I just was determined in small chunks, like determined to say, in this afternoon we have together, I am going to put aside whatever else is going on, and I am going to be 100% present with you, and we are going to have a great time. And not in a grin
Camp
and
cancer.
bear it, let's pretend we're having a good time kind of way, but a truly, I'm going to step into a different world, and we're just going to have great time, and we're just going to have fun. And then I kind of worked on stretching the amount of time that I was able to do that. And then, I mean, I will say I had never lived by myself. I had gone from, you know, roommates in college to roommates after college to living with my husband. And so there was some excitement to living by myself. That really felt enormously freeing. And so I used some of that energy. And maybe a little bit of, you know, up yours energy to right, to buy a new bed and to do some decorating. And so there was some sense of adventure there in some ways. And
Was
it
there a period? This is interesting to me. Was there a period where, I mean, you were saying you wanted to really show up and not be like a performer or a camp counselor when you were doing that. But was there a period where what you were kind of doing was separating your relationship with your daughter from the emotions that were happening in sep with your soon-to-be ex?
Oh, for sure.
And then did it become a more genuine, I truly have stepped through this and I do not experience any anger or resentment.
Yes, and I mean, I think
You don't
that
sound entirely sure about that.
no, I'm just trying to think of the timeline,
Oh, okay. All right, yes.
right? Because it didn't happen overnight. Now,
You know, I
another
can't imagine because you once you have kids with somebody, you still interact with that person for the life of the children. And in this case, you have had he went on to marry the person that is in the third party in here. And so you had to come face to face with that.
Yes, and that was hard. That was really hard. And what actually ended up happening was the only request I had made of him when I moved out in March was, please. Well, no. Once he had the divorce was once he filed for divorce was please don't introduce Julie to Natasha for 6 months.
And did he observe that?
No.
I was going to say I didn't have a lot of faith in that. The requests like that that I've seen people make, they're made with the best of intentions, but it's impossible to enforce. It just relies on the other person agreeing to do it. Like he
It
could have
can't,
easily been
honestly.
able to do it, but it was up to him. Yeah.
And you know, and he, how did I find out? Because he had the house repainted, and so they spent the weekend at Natasha's house so that they weren't in paint fumes. And so, you know, my kid comes back to me, my now 3-year-old comes back to me and says, like, oh, we slept at daddy's friend Natasha's. It's like, you know, oh, thank you.
There are no secrets when you've got small children involved. That's preschool teachers will tell you they know absolutely everything about your life because the kids just come in and say everything. Everything. And they don't, like you said, they aren't good interpreters. They're also not the greatest relayers of accurate information sometimes. You know, the message gets, but to have somebody that young moving between the houses, it does mean that she's going to share what's going on in her life with you, whether you want to or not. And as an outsider, somebody who's working with families, you want the kids to have that freedom to talk about the things that are going around, right? You don't want to put that pressure on the kids. But as the adults who are in it, it can be a lot. You don't necessarily want to know what's going on in the other house. Like, ah, thanks for telling me, Julie. Yay. And you want some peas with dinner? Yeah.
So ironically, Natasha had been through a very intense therapy, group therapy, individual therapy program. And so the therapist that Matthew found that he and I were using was one of the therapists from this group therapy program. Not her, not Natasha's therapist, but
They're
within the
not supposed to be the same, right? If
right,
they
weren't the same,
if
but within this group. And so when, you know, when I did find out that Matthew had had an affair, and at some point, you know, the therapist looked at Matthew and said, look, even putting Elizabeth aside, think about your daughter. And, you know, think about the fact that you are willing to break up her home and commit her to a life of living back and forth between two houses. You know, for the sake of a woman who honestly you don't know very well. And she said something else which was not too complimentary about Natasha. And Matthew was like, don't you ever speak about her like that.
Oh, so you were right there.
And I'm right there. And I remember the therapist looked at me and I looked at the therapist and I kind of shrugged. And Matthew got up and he left the session. And I was like, oh, so I guess he's not coming back. So where do we go from here? And she's like, well, do you want me to be your therapist? And so I was like, yes, please. And not right in that moment. But eventually she suggested that I do the same program that Natasha had done. And so it was 8 weeks of very It was 2 hours a week of group therapy. It was an hour a week of individual therapy, and it was a ton of writing assignments.
And the focus of this was personal transformation in
Yes.
context of
Yes.
relationships.
Right.
Okay.
It wasn't about the divorce or anything else. It was really about saying, like, okay, Elizabeth, you're starting a new chapter. This is your chance to figure out who you are and who you want to be and how you want to show up in the world.
And you were doing that sort of in like in the second half of de-meshing this relationship. Like you were, so you were putting emphasis on finding yourself as you were going through this decoupling.
Yes.
I think that's like a, that's a tremendous, that's fantastic. I think that I mean, outsider, like you, that is, it's, it is a time of redefinition in so many ways, but the process itself, which you lived through, takes an enormous amount of time and resources and energy. You had a new house, you had a small kid, you were setting up a new job, you were doing all of these things to be able to really give the redefinition of yourself the gravity and the time and the effort that it would, that it needed. Wow, I bet you that paid off in spades.
I think so.
Yeah.
100%.
And so is the is then the action of you choosing to not be bitter, is the flip side of that description that you really were choosing to be yourself and walk forward into your true path?
I think it's fair to put it that way, sure.
Yeah, to stop letting this define. But there had to be, there's another part of it, which is healing from the hurt. I mean, you, somebody, this is a wound. This cannot have been easy to live through, to have this this happen to you.
Well, I mean, through the therapy, we did ritualistic things. It included things like taking a big box and stuffing it with newspaper and duct taping it up, and then, taking a bat and beating on the bat and getting all the anger out. I mean, some of these traditional things that you hear about in therapy, and then in the group setting, so that everybody else knows what you're mad about, and they're getting mad on your behalf, and you're hitting the box. I did a margarita voodoo doll night with my girlfriends, and.
That reminds me of the joke that where the, it's the joke where the wife yells down to her husband, "Hey, do you feel anything? You know, do you feel like anything poking you?" And the husband says, "No." And she's like, "How about now?"
Well, it was good. It was super therapeutic. And another day, as part of this group coaching, we had a day at the beach, and there was a bonfire, and I threw my engagement ring, no, I threw my wedding ring in the bonfire. And again, it was very freeing and very ceremonial. And I really allowed sort of ritual and process. In fact, that's what this group coaching was called. It's called the process. I really allowed it to do some of the work of letting go and cleaning out.
And cleaning out and seeing the separation. And then you say that this turned into joy and possibility.
It truly did. And the summer was almost magical. I was a teacher, so I had the summer off. And normally I would try to find some kind of work to do in the summer. But I was like, no way. I
Right.
felt no obligation whatsoever. And so now, and now my kid is away from me 50% of the time. We went straight to 50, 50% of the time. And dropping her off was horrible. Like, I would drop her off and I would go home and I would cry for, like, sob. I'm sure the people in the apartments around me were like, what is wrong with this woman? Because I would just, like, that really kind of loud, dramatic, life is coming into an end kind of sobbing. But then I would take a shower and I would put on my dancing shoes and I would go dancing. Ballroom dancing a lot of the time, but also there was English country line dancing.
Okay.
which is like being a whirling dervish, because it's basically you just twirl, twirl, like you're just hooking arms with somebody and turning and hooking arms with somebody else, and this goes on and on and on and on. So it's like 3 hours of twirling. And I would be completely drenched with sweat in the end. And already I would have cried myself out, right?
Yeah.
So I would cry myself out, and then I would go and twirl and twirl and twirl and twirl and twirl and be hot and sweaty. And I would go home and I would like sleep the sleep of the dead. And I didn't have her on Sundays, so I could sleep the sleep of
Yeah.
the dead. And so, as I said, it was like this sense of adventure.
Yeah.
And then I didn't have anyone to take care of.
Yes, that's right.
Right?
You, so you were able to focus on you.
So you know what the stress is of for new mothers. And I had been doing, I think if you asked me, I'd been doing 90% of the home care and the child care. My husband, my ex-husband, would probably have said no, it was, 80%. But
Right, but at that, and some of that is she was little. Little kids often have a dominant caregiver within a house. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, right? But then there's the other part of that within a house that we all feel like we're doing all of the work all of the time, and everybody feels that way. Everybody feels that way, and the true numbers are up for negotiation. Up for negotiation. My many. This is now a couple of years ago, but my husband came in. He's like. He had emptied the dishwasher and he wanted a gold star. And I was like, hey, thanks, you know, good, right? And we have this big, busy house. And I'm like looking at him and I'm like, do you not know that this happens every day? Like the dishwasher is loaded, emptied at least once, sometimes twice a day. Like you've done it once. Like, how much of a gold star do you want here? And he's like, but I did it. And I'm like, yay. But from his perspective, he didn't know. He didn't know, which is a whole other discussion. A whole other discussion about what
Whole
else.
other discussion.
So, but
So
yeah, you are going through this adjustment where you have this free time,
I have this free
which is
time.
great.
I don't have to make dinner for anybody. I
Right.
can eat cereal for dinner and nobody's going to judge me.
Oh, yeah. No, so good. I loved it when the whole girl dinner came out, and I was like, this is not a new thing. This is what we eat when no, we don't have to cook for you. Cereal, yeah, Golden Grahams, ice cream, maybe a glass of wine. Fine, moving on, you know.
So all that helped. And then one of the activities that we did, it was the last piece of writing that we did in this process. And it was to essentially write out the qualities and characteristics of the mate that you desired.
Okay.
So, I created this checklist. And meanwhile, because Matthew at some point had looked at me and would be like, well, who'd want to date you? I had signed up with Match.com.
Okay.
And so I had started going on dates. And I have to tell you, it was pretty terrible. I was a terrible date because I would come with my yellow legal pad, and I'd be like, and then I only dated people who were divorced. And I'd be like, okay, what's your custody schedule? What do you do? Like winter coats. Does it go back and forth? Do you have two? Do you have one at each house? What about,
Yep.
I didn't know how to, like, the logistics
Yep.
of being it. Oh, those poor men. Like, lady, why did you, this is not a date. This is an interrogation. But towards the end of August, I met Bala. And it didn't take very long to find out that Bala checked off like 8 of the things on my list of 10.
Wow.
Wow. And I was head over heels in a way that I had never ever been head over heels before.
Wow, this is a really positive end to this story. This, like, and okay, so many, many times years ago, there was an old movie called Weird Science, and they like make like the robot girlfriend. So when you were talking about the list that popped into my mind as like the robot, the movie reference, like it's like, here's your list, design your dream person. But I so you go through this really tough thing with this person who's at times not very nice to you, it turns out. You go through an intentional program for personal development. You lean into the process of making a transition, which is a terrific thing. And then you make this list of your mate, and then you pop it into match.com, and lo and behold, out pops a match.
Well, and I mean, it wasn't that direct because I don't know what I put into Match. What I finally did with Match.com was I changed my handle or my title to the title of my blurb to Shall We Dance?
Okay.
Because I was looking for a date for the San Francisco Waltz Ball fall dance. And
Wait a second. What is it called again? The San Francisco
the San
Waltz Ball,
Francisco Waltz Ball.
which could
So
be
it's
you could have that could have existed in 1500, but you're doing this in like 1995. Okay.
I'm sad to say it no longer exists because I would
I'm
still
so I
go.
am sad about that. They should rekindle that, the San Francisco Waltz Ball. Okay, going on.
Yes. And so, based on that, Bala, my husband, reached out to me and said, and expressed interest. And I looked at his profile. Engineer, no. Just got rid of one engineer. Don't want another one. Athlete. I dance, but I'm not an athlete, right? I think he said I think he was a Francophile. My mother's a Francophile. I was not super happy with my mom at the time. I was like, yeah, no, thank you. And this is all typing, right? He emailed back the perfect answer, which was, what's your problem? Like, we go dancing, either we have fun, either there's a spark, which is nice, otherwise we have fun dancing. And I was
All
like, oh yeah,
right.
you're right. So we set up a date to go dancing. And as it happened, we were able to have a lunch ahead of time because there was a slight change in his custody schedule. So that freed up. So we were able to have a lunch. And we had a good lunch and we talked for like 3 hours. But it wasn't super clear to me. It
It
came out
was
of the cat.
lunch.
It was nice. It was lunch, but it wasn't earth shattering. And then we go to a dance class, and it's a waltz class. And we go out onto the floor, and I put my hand in his, and sparks go right down my arm, right down through my privates to my toes, back up out the top of my head. And I was just like, oh my God.
Wow. So this is where joy that okay, I have chills. All right, that's an amazing story. One of the things that's interesting from like now looking back over the whole time frame, you had known your husband since you were a young kid. And so he was like an omnipresent thing. You guys didn't like connect through adult hobbies and connections. You go through this whole very hard process, but some of the oldest relationship advice that for making friends and finding partners is to connect through hobbies, like find people who share a passion with you. And that's what you plugged into Match. And that's how one of the ways you found this. And so you then connected with somebody who you had a shared adult interest with, which I think is like an amazing pattern. Amazing pattern. That is amazing. All right. So you mentioned that you weren't super happy with your mom at this time. What kind of support did you have when you were going through this 8 months of pulling your marriage apart?
Yes, I did have good friends, very good friends. And they were, and I had two very good friends who had babies the same age, born the same summer as mine. And we had all spent a lot of time together. And they were absolutely fabulous. And then I had a friend, a couple who's the husband, he and Matthew had grown up together, and Dan and Matthew and I had all gone to high school together. And his wife was still a really enormous support to me. Like, I called her every night before bed,
Okay.
just so that I had somebody to say, like, okay, I'm alive. Right.
I have not driven into a tree.
So they were tremendous, and I think people looking back, I think they did a remarkable job of just focusing on, what do you need right now, Elizabeth, rather than getting caught up in Matthew and what he was doing and who he was being. And so it was less about, oh, I always thought this about him, da, 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 or he's doing that, or how can you stand it, or whatever else. And I mean, we were spending a lot of time with the children together. So in some ways we couldn't talk about stuff a lot.
Right, you had to edit the
But,
conversation. It was a rated G conversation space.
right.
Got it.
But so a lot of it was just about, and there were some things like being able to eat cereal for dinner. I remember the first time that all the moms were together. We'd gone to the park. We'd spent the afternoon with the kids in the park. And they're like, okay, let's call the dads and see if we should all go out for pizza. And there was this enormous sense of relief because normally that was a conversation that had happened many, many times before. But normally I would be calling Matthew and saying, hey, we're all going to pizza. Will you come? And he would be saying, no, I've got work to do. So just bring me something home.
Okay.
And so I would be the person at this party who didn't have her partner there, but there would be the expectation of having a partner,
Yep.
and the frustration that he wasn't there. And now all of a sudden, there's no expectation that he's going to be there.
And you get to make a decision just for yourself.
And I just get to go and have fun, and I'm not taking pizza home to anybody. Or if I am, it's home, it's leftovers for me. And I get to eat the kind of pizza that I want to eat because I don't have to consider him. And so,
Yeah.
right, there were
Yes.
these moments of like tremendous freedom.
That's very good. All right, so this was quite a while ago. Are all the same players involved in your family circus at this time? Was it one shift and then everybody lived happily ever after?
Happily, pretty much so.
That's amazing. And 'cause your daughter is now, this was long enough ago
She's
that now she's at
28. She's
28.
married. She got married
Yeah.
last summer.
Very exciting.
Her father and I walked her down the aisle. Her stepmother and stepfather walked together. She had a chuppah at her wedding because her husband is Jewish. So they carried the chuppah together. They processed first, and then Matthew and I processed together. Nobody walked her down the aisle because, who's giving this woman away? That wasn't
Okay.
not an idea that
That
seemed
spoke
relevant
to her.
in
Sure.
2025. So yes, and oh, here I'll tell you my coup de grace.
Okay.
Matthew and Natasha had, when Julie was six, Matthew and Natasha had a baby girl named Nika, and I always did my best to interact with Nika and to play with her and to have fun with her. So if we're, at the soccer game or the rock concert or the graduation or the birthday party of Julie's birthday, whatever it was, to treat Nika as if she were an important person in our lives. After all, this is my daughter's
This is your
sister,
daughter's sister. Yeah.
right? And apparently I did such a good job of that that when Nico was in eighth grade, Julie then is at college. Matthew's parents had both died, and Natasha's father died. And so there's one Slovenian living in Slovenia grandmother left. And so they asked me, should something happen to them, would I be the nominated guardian
Tremendous compliment.
for their child?
Yeah.
Yes. And like Matthew's sister is a child clinical psychologist, perfectly good choice, but she's never had children of her own. And it would mean moving Nico away from her school. Whereas if Nico were with us, she would be able to continue to go to her high school, and she would have a continue, you know, if her parents died, she would at least get to have a continuous high school experience and be able to graduate from her high school experience.
That is tremendous. Now she's an adult now too.
She is she's at Davis. She's a senior. God, I think she's a
She's
senior
an
at
adult.
Davis.
It is those conversations, though, in extended families. I mean, this, even if you're not in an extended blended family, those conversations are hard. Like, what will we do if we, something happens and we all die? That's not a conver that's a conversation that's tough to have at any time. But they do, there are unusual combinations that pop up sometimes when you've got close enough sibling bonds that sort of intermingle with former relationships, right? It's like a crazy thing. So the kids are siblings. The kids are siblings, and the problems between the adults are not the problems always of the kids. I mean, sometimes they are, but sometimes they're not. I always tell people when my dad died and everybody else was out of town, my babies went to stay with my husband's ex-wife for like 18 hours while I rushed to deal with it because they were with their brother and sister. And there nobody even asked a question. Like, we made the call and they said yes. And I, and I tell people that I'm like, yeah, that was the closest, like, responsible adult. Never cry. I mean, I just knew I'm very lucky, and so are you, and so is Nika, to have that kind of strength across the houses, right? But I didn't have to worry that that person, that those adults were gonna treat my kids the way I would. They were gonna take care of them, which is a terrific compliment. That is a compliment for you. It is a compliment for your whole family. Because it takes a lot of work from everybody's side to build that kind of stability. It really does. That is a great story. All right, so we're going to get to the final questions here. I want to thank you for sharing this. This is an experience a lot of people go through. It's an experience that a lot of people don't talk about. It should be talked about more. But I want to give you the chance to tell people, because this is not the story you tell every day, but what is it that you do, and how can people connect with you online?
Thank you for asking. My business is Joyful Parenting Coaching, along our theme of choosing joy.
Choosing joy.
Parenting is a skill. We used to learn it organically through social interactions. We are not being as social as we used to be, but it is a skill. So it can be taught and learned and practiced. And as a teacher, I began to see a real shift in parents towards anxiety and overwhelm and guilt. And I recognized it was because they didn't have the connection and the support and the learning environment. So they were not getting the skills that they needed to be able to parent in such a way that it wasn't sucking the soul out of them.
Sure.
And so I made the decision to give up my tenured teaching job and start parenting coaching, and that was 10 years ago. So I support parents by giving them the skills they need to create happy, harmonious homes where kids thrive. And yes, parenting is always going to be demanding. So I'm not saying that you're not going to be tired, you're not going to be everything else, but that essentially it is a joyful process. It's a energy feeding process rather than an energy draining process.
Excellent, excellent. And we'll put your website in the show notes and in the newsletter that goes to all the subscribers so that you can just click on it. But your website is, say, it's, go ahead and say your website so people have it when they're
Oh,
listening.
it's just my name. It's Elizabeth with an S, not a Z. That's the hard part. But it's elizabethstitt.com.
Very good. And the easiest way to get that is to be subscribed to imperfectadulting.com, because that way you just click on it. It's easy, easy, easy. All right, so are you ready? We're going to do the three final questions.
I can't wait.
All right, very good. All right, just for fun, don't be nervous. Just say whatever comes to mind. Okay. Do you remember the Muppets?
Sure.
Okay, all right. Do you have a favorite Muppet character? And I'll give you a Sesame Street extension. You can pick from the Muppets
Kermit.
or Kermit. All right, Kermit is your favorite Muppet. Very good. Very good. That question brings me joy. Okay. If you watch TV, what is a favorite TV program that you've watched in the last couple of months?
Okay, I have to tell you that we've been watching Elspeth, and
Okay.
50% at least of the reason that I like it is because Elsbeth is with an S is so close to Elizabeth. Like there's only the I missing, and it comes up and it's big, bright pink letters. And yeah, it just makes me happy.
Makes you, because you spent your whole life telling people not a Z, and you're
Yes.
like, they, look, there it is. There's an S. That's
There it is.
fantastic.
And the
That's
other
fantastic.
50% of the reason I like it is her clothes are so outrageous. They are so fun.
Spectacular.
I just love looking at what outfit she has on.
Oh, that's spectacular. All right, very good. Now, When you want to give yourself a treat to do something or something fun or something really nice for yourself, what is something that you will do?
I live 2 hours from the beach. I mean, 2 miles from the beach. So I will get up from my desk and I will grab an apple and I will drive and go to the beach and put my feet in the sand and watch the waves come in and eat my apple. And I might stay a little bit longer, or I might get up and go home and come back and sit at my desk.
I love that. How's the parking for you at the beach parking? Do you guys have beach parking problems?
Well, certainly not in the middle of the week, no.
Okay.
This is
Okay.
Northern California.
Very, I get it. We have pot, like any tourist place, it's like when you go to the great places, you have to sort of play the game of where, how do I do this and how do I avoid the traffic jams? But which is just that is just a thing that happens when you live in a place where people want to be. So that's good. That's it, Elizabeth Stitt. Thank you so much for being a great guest.
So much fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.